Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the January 7th edition of Commodity Week. Well, we've made it. USDA is about to release its 2010 final crop production numbers. What will they say? You'll find out today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I am Todd Gleason. Welcome to Commodity Week. Our panelists in studio with us today, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana, and Brian Stark of the Andersons from Champaign, Illinois, our guest on the phone line a bit later in the program, Jim Wiesemeyer of Informa Economics.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Let's start with this question, Wayne Nelson. Which number, when it's released next Thursday, will the USDA put the biggest surprise in?
Well, I think it's going to be on what they actually do with our exports, Todd. I think that we might see them shrink back a little bit to the pace we're on because of our slower corn exports to start out the year and maybe a little bit of rationing put into it. So I think that they might shrink back what the export number might be in corn.
Brian Stark?
For me, Todd, it's got to be the feed usage number because of the stock questions we saw back in June where we lost 300 million bushels, gained it back at the end of September. So I'm interested to see if there's any adjustments for the disappearance and reappearance.
And Mike Zuzulo.
I think Wayne and Brian on the same track. I think the corn is the biggie. We've still got really good biofuel usage. We've got good feed usage, but our exports have come down a little bit. So the trade's probably gearing for a 10 billion bushel stocks number, Todd. If it were below that and below the lowest estimate by the Newswire survey of 9.8, I think that would garner some attention and be friendly.
Okay, so those quarterly grain stocks numbers, you mentioned something there, Brian, about the disappearance of 300 million and then, well, we got 150 million back. That leaves 150 million floating around right somewhere. You think those will show up?
That's a good question. I think the trade obviously wants to see some answers because at the end of September when we saw the third quarterly stocks report, there was a lot of question of whether there was some new corn being mixed with old and a lot of some confusion. So it'd be interesting to see if some of that shows back up.
Here's the way the numbers settled up in Chicago for the week from the corn pit. The March contract at a high of $6.34, low at $5.95. The settlement price there was down 34 cents at $5.95. December of next year at $5.42 was down 20. I'll stay with you just for a second, Brian. I wanted to know whether or not you had much movement this week because, well, we topped $6 at one point.
I think we saw really good movement, Todd, but most of it was contracted grain that had been previously sold. So not a lot of $6 corn is moving today, but previously older contracts. But very good movement. Weather's been good. The farmer's been sitting for 2.5 months since harvest got over early in October is ready to move some grain.
Yeah, but that would be expected movement, right?
Expected movement, and we're also seeing some additional movement based on price. I would say about a quarter of it is new contracted grain.
Numbers like this, expectations at least for USDA's report when it comes out on the 12th day of January. Corn on the quarterly grain stocks report average trade guess at 10.067. That's, of course, the Q1 first quarter on hand. Soybeans at 2.345 billion and wheat at 1.938. 8 billion. And then, of course, we have the crop production or endings, crop production numbers and some of the ending stock numbers that are due out. We'll do the ending stock numbers. They're looking for world ending stocks at 127 million metric tons on corn. And the ending stocks for the United States, a very tight Wayne Nelson, 779 million bushels.
Yes, Todd, we are looking for a very tight stocks-to-use ratio. We're looking for things to come in. We're seeing tremendous use of corn for ethanol products right now. We know that the Linden plant is running about 130% of what they considered full bore. And we're looking, you know, for Cloverdale to come online. So we're looking at a lot of ethanol usage around going that way. We're looking for a lot of feed usage. But the export numbers are just hanging back there right now. But we are seeing a lot of exports in what we don't normally think about is in DDGs. China is actually coming up and wanting to talk about dumping as far as DDGs on their market over there as for what we're doing and all the tonnage we're shipping them.
Let's take up just that ethanol market, and maybe we'll get from both you, Mike, and from you, Brian, a look at that. There was some thought that they were front-loading based on an idea that the tax credits might go away. That didn't happen, of course, and the lame duck session took care of it. Is ethanol production going to continue to move at such a rapid rate, and can it possibly do that?
I don't think it will from an economic standpoint of what the unleaded gas price is right now, Todd. It'll stay strong, but at a certain price per gallon of unleaded, I think the total fuel usage will start to flatten out and even start to drop. And I think some of the economists that are starting to trim some of their world GDP numbers and U.S. GDP numbers based upon $100 a barrel oil, it may be good in the short term, but when it comes to the actual demand that the EIA reports, I think it'll be probably lower usage if prices keep going up here.
I would agree with Mike. I think the short term, it's going to continue to be very firm as far as production goes. Oil, obviously, the higher we see oil inputs go, the more profitable it is for ethanol plants to continue to run. But at the same token, you look out and you see maybe potential for decreased usage in gasoline over the course of time by higher prices, and that would eventually slow your demand for ethanol down.
I'd like to poll you all on your corn outlook and your soybean outlook, both new and old crop. Let's do corn only first. Should a producer who has corn left in the bin open up the doors and make sales prior to the USDA report? Also, should they try to book some for the next fall on their new crop? Wayne Nelson.
Well, we sold a unit of corn there when we hit 620 basis in March. That was our goal and target, is to make our next sale after we'd made a lot too early. As far as the new crop, we're at 20% sold in the cash market. Anybody that's wanted to go beyond that, when it got over $5, we are replacing that with some bull call spreads, or protecting that, not replacing it, but doing that. So we're basically 20% sold the new crop, and we did sell another increment of old crop at 620 on the board.
Brian?
We've told producers that I think they should be selling some of their percentage of old corn. What makes us nervous is the fact that maybe at this point in time, the old new spread, if you look at March versus Dease corn, maybe is a little bit too inverted, given the fact we don't know if we're going to see this type of demand pace continue for ethanol for the entire year. So we've been targeting $6. As far as new crop goes, we're getting close to our February determination month for crop insurance. I think that's going to be the best put a producer can look at taking, so maybe 10%, but we've not been very aggressive in recommending new crop sales.
And Mike Zuzulo.
10 corn in the bin, if you still have it. I would recommend not doing anything until more is known about Argentina, Todd. I think that if the Argentines have a lower crop, and that's one of the other big things on next week's report, if they have a lower crop, I think the basis will be pulled into the Gulf, because end users, I think, will switch from Argentine origin to the United States. And I think that would impact especially the central Illinois people, because that's near the river, and also that's where the yield problems were. So I would hold off on cash sales. If I didn't get a wheat rally after the January report and I lost my technical foothold on the weekly charts, I'd be using more puts, short-term puts, for what I have in the bin on corn.
And then turn it around and do soybeans for me, and we'll go the other direction.
I like doing 11 soybeans here just because of the profit level and the price level we're at here. I am defending those sales, but I'd like to start out with recommending 11 bean sales and then follow up with 11 corn sales later down the road. As far as 10 beans, I'm kind of mixed on it. I could go either way. I think after the January report, I probably would not have a lot of beans left.
I would agree with Mike. I think looking at old crop beans, I would probably be, depending on how the report comes out, maybe a seller at these levels. New crop side, I'd echo the same thing. Maybe making a few new crop bean sales versus corn early on, but still paying attention to the crop insurance floor we set in place, because South America weather obviously is detrimental, and we all know the acreage issue is going to be huge.
We're sitting on our hands as far as the bean market goes right now, Todd. I think that the weather problems in Argentina are big, and I think that there is a great potential for this market maybe to explode up a little bit. So we're going to sit on our hands in the bean market.
And here's some of the rest of the numbers as they stack up from the trade, looking at USDA's report next week, expecting the final crop production number for corn at 12.5 billion bushels. On 154.159, USDA's estimate last time around 12.54 and 154.3, so that's down slightly. Soybeans, a 3.373 billion bushel production, 3.375, USDA's last number, the yield at 43.96, and that's just slightly higher than USDA's 43.9 flat the last time around. Soybeans finished this week with a high in the January contract of $13.99, a low at $13.50. The January settled at $13.57. They were down 36 cents on the week. November beans at $12.81, were down 26¾. It's not as tight ending stocks for beans as we've seen in the past, but it's still not a very large ending stock number.
No, it isn't. And I think, again, similar to what Mike said earlier about Argentina's corn crop, I think their bean crop is potentially still in question. Private analyst Dr. Cordonier has lowered his estimate down to 48 million metric ton. I think that we cannot afford to have a big shortfall in Argentina given the demand that we see out of China, out of the world for protein and beans, and the fact that going forward in our acreage issue, it's just a stretch to think we can find total number of acres we need to balance all crops.
Would you agree with that amount of damage, and what does the weather forecast look like for those areas?
Well, we're seeing a little bit of chance for a little bit of moisture here short term, but the long term forecast is still moisture deficit and does keep things under pressure as far as the crops looking good. Brazil is looking very good, and they actually expanded their crop a little bit, their crop production estimates, but we think that they're probably going to be a little bit on the high side, is what Informa said this last week as far as the beans in Argentina. I think that Michael Cordonier is probably much closer.
China continues to import beans. Will they keep up a record pace?
I think they will in the short term, Todd, just because they need to consume more and more protein in the form of red meats, and I think they're trying to get their house in order after this last harvest. I think the time period that would be most cautionary at this point would be the March-April time period, is to see whether after the Lunar New Year next month, and after they get some of this protein need booked, will they go ahead and slow down in the springtime right ahead of our planting? And I think that seasonally can indeed and does happen.
Time for a final word from all of our panelists in studio. Wayne Nelson, we'll start with you.
Well, I think we've got a very big report coming up on Wednesday. I think that we need to be cautious. I think that, you know, if you haven't done a little bit of booking of new crop corn, it's time to think about a little bit. But don't need to get too aggressive, because our long-term plan is to be a little bit friendly.
Brian Stark?
And I would echo the same thing. I think the bullish sentiment is still felt by many of us, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't show prudent risk management and liquidating a little bit of old crop ahead of this report.
And Mike Zuzalo.
You know, when you peel away the fund rebalancing this past week, Todd, you had the weather and the outside markets as the major drivers. They were both bullish early in the week, and then they faded late in the week. I would hope that after the January report, we would not continue that trend, and we'd see the outside markets hold firm, and we'd also see the weather come in and help us on the price as well.
Our thanks to our panelists in studio, including Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, Mike Zuzalo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting from Lafayette, Indiana, and Brian Stark of the Andersons right here in Champaign County. In just a couple minutes, We'll speak with Jim Wiesmeyer. He's with Informa Economics. I had a conversation with him earlier in the week as, well, I'm on the road most of this past week and most of the coming week with the Corn and Soybean Classics series. That's the series of extension meetings. Gives you an opportunity to talk to the crop scientist and specialist right here on campus. Next week, by the way, if you want to come and see us, we start at 9 o'clock pronto. But you can come and pre-register in the 8 o'clock hour. That at Bloomington at the Doubletree will be in Malta. That's near DeKalb at Kishwaukee College. The IMARC Center downtown in Moline on Wednesday of this coming week. And then we'll be over at the Holiday Inn in Quincy. I hope to see you then. And in just a couple minutes, we'll be here with Jim Wiesmeyer.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. The first week of 2011 was remarkably normal throughout the state of Illinois. Since the snows of December have departed the landscape, temperatures have been near normal across the state. Normal highs for this time of year run from the mid to upper 20s north to the low 30s in central Illinois to near 40 in the far south, while overnight lows are typically in the teens to low 20s. Despite all of the snow last month, and in some cases record-breaking snowfall totals, December precipitation was below normal in most areas, and that weather regime has continued into January. The only precipitation this week were light flurries during the last half of the week. The weather will remain colder than normal throughout Illinois next week. Some light snow is possible Monday and Tuesday as low pressure moves to the south of the region. As that disturbance passes off to the east, much colder air will be pulled south out of Canada and across the Midwest for the last half of the week. After Tuesday, most of next week will be dry. The medium-range models are indicating a possible strong storm system may be affecting the Midwest by next weekend. Right now, it looks like that may bring some snow to Illinois, but more importantly, it could be followed by the coldest air of the season so far and a period of strong winds. However, it is still a week away, and a lot can happen with the models during that time. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
This is the Friday, January the 7th edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Jim Wiesmeyer is the Senior Vice President for Farm and Trade Policy at Informa Economics. He's based in Washington, D.C. You may know him as the Washington Insider on the Ag Web page. He joins us not on this Friday afternoon, but a bit earlier in the week because he's traveling to Mexico at this point in time. Jim, thanks so much for taking time with us to discuss what's been happening in Washington, D.C. We have much on our table. Let's start with Frank Lucas. He's the new chair of the House Ag Committee. How's he stack up?
Well, he's going to be similar to the outgoing chairman, Colin Peterson of Minnesota, but there are some differences. He will be more inclined to keep those a little over $5 billion in direct payments for farmers in whenever we get the new farm bill. He's also more prone to look at conservation program funding. He likes it. I think he's going to be a more equitable chairman relative to the trade-offs between the livestock in the crop sector. And the last thing I'd mention is he's going to put a bullseye at the Environmental Protection Agency, trying to rein their regulatory zealousness in a bit.
What do you mean by that?
Well, relative to dust on farms, perhaps in the air areas, relative to the livestock and the CAFO rules, and there's bipartisan support for that. That's just not a Republican attitude. Again, Colin Peterson, the outgoing chairman, also thinks that EPA has got far too aggressive in the past year to 2 years under the Obama administration.
No, Mr. Peterson had gotten an early start on the 2012 Farm Bill, kind of laying out an idea that the direct payment should go away. You're telling me that our Oklahoman, Mr. Lucas, who will now chair that House Ag Committee, says, no, I kind of like the direct payments. Will they be able to usher through the 2012 Farm Bill prior to the election of the next president?
Well, I think so, but in my speeches, I never say a specific year for a farm bill. I usually say the next farm bill, because when you look back at the two prior omnibus bills, the 2008 and the one before, they really started, they were supposed to be completed the year before. Nonetheless, I do think that we'll get a markup in the actual writing of the bill in calendar year 2012. Peterson wanted it done this calendar year in 2011, but now with the incoming Lucas and the new chairwoman on the Senate Ag Committee, Debbie Stabenow, I think that they'll take most of this year in doing some more hearings and educating the many new members of the House Ag panel.
How will the relatively good economic times in the agricultural sector in a large part of the nation impact Farm Bill for the next time around?
Well, that usually means that you have a lower budget baseline because you forecast that it won't put out as much money in income transfer payments. I think the major debate on the Farm Bill will be how much money they have to spend. They won't get as much as they had in 2008, and no matter what happens in the next Farm Bill, eventually those payments are going to be cut. It depends when this town, both the legislative and the executive branch, get serious about the budget deficit reduction. So what I'm signaling here is whatever we get, it will be reduced in the years ahead, not draconian cuts, but if direct payments survive, they'll eventually be reduced because for agriculture's contribution to dealing with our huge over $14 trillion debt.
On the subject of Washington, D.C., the town, and whether it can take up important issues, is gridlock likely to return to Washington?
I would think that if you quiz the so-called smart money in this town, which is usually wrong, 95% would say there would be gridlock, perhaps for a pretty good reason. There are fewer moderates in Congress in both political parties. That means there's more liberals on the Democratic side and more conservatives on the Republican side trying to deal with the president, who we know is starting to change. We just don't know in what direction. I think Obama showed his initial cards during the lame duck session, in which he negotiated, to me, I think, a better deal for him. And I don't know whether we're going to see more of that. If we do, I think observers could be surprised at some of the agreements that Obama could work out, say with incoming House Speaker John Boehner from Ohio. Again, I'm not much over 50% on that, but I see Obama more of a deal maker than most people I've heard.
Speaking of the lame duck session, a couple of important agricultural issues were taken up. Ethanol and its tax breaks were extended. What will happen when those end?
It's a big question mark. The seriousness of this is that several of the major ethanol lobby groups are not in agreement on what should happen next. And Senator Chuck Grassley, Republican from Iowa, has warned the industry that if they don't come in consort with a recommendation, these tax incentives, which expire at the end of this calendar year, could be hard to extend any further. With that in mind, I think Growth Energy's proposal to eventually transfer or transition these payments to infrastructure spending, helping retail gasoline stations buy those expensive blender pumps, perhaps put in new tanks. I personally think that is the better route to go, because Growth Energy caught a wave here about 6 months ago, knowing full well what's going to happen with budget deficit cutting in the months and years ahead. So if they don't reform the program, Congress will reform it for them. In other words, dramatic cuts in that direct payment, for the ethanol industry, the so-called VTEC payment. So watch the ethanol lobby groups, in particular Growth Energy and the Renewable Fuels Association, to see whether or not they can come to any agreement.
Another deal the Obama administration made during the lame duck session concerned the Bush tax cuts. Those were extended for a couple of years. That puts them back on the table just before the election, I suppose, in 2012.
Yeah, you can almost easily predict a lame duck session for 2012 after the presidential election. And I can't think for Obama. I cannot understand him a lot anyway. But I would think from a political basis, from Obama's thinking, he's going to win re-election in 2012. After he wins, then he will have the cards on his side of the table to significantly deal, not to further extend those Bush 01 and 03 tax cuts for the so-called wealthy. That's, I think, his strategy going into the lame duck. Give you 2 years now, but if I get reelected, you're not going to get them any further.
All right. Some other things that might be taken up in the coming year. What about the CFTC, its regulatory powers, and what happens with trade?
That could be one of the more market-sensitive items in the ag community trading. As the CFTC is mulling new position limits, and any bullish trader knows that in the past bull markets, those position limits become very important as the bull market matures. It's unknown what those new position limits will be, but they are going to be changed. Another one is in this swap area. How are they going to define swaps? You talk to a lot of agribusiness executives, including in the crop insurance industry, and that's one of their more important items that they're watching right now.
You brought up crop insurance. What about risk management in the coming year? Changes to crop insurance coming?
Well, one of the few farm programs, again, in my judgment, that works is crop insurance. It's risk management. Any traders in your audience would know that that's a risk management vehicle. If you talk to the corn, soybean, wheat producer, they really like those programs in place. Regretfully, this administration has found that it's a money-grabbing game. They took out $4 billion already from that program to spread around over the last year. The threat is that they'll look into that program some more for further budget deficit reduction cuts. I hope they're not successful. I think that with Lucas coming in on the House Ag Committee side and Pat Roberts, one of the experts in the Senate on crop insurance, I don't think they're going to touch crop insurance like they did over the past year or so.
And one final topic, this one just a bit off, but related only because it's related to crude oil. What about drilling in the Gulf of Mexico? Will the Obama administration allow that to happen?
Well, they said that they were going to allow that to happen, but as we've seen in any administration that loves the regulatory route, they can take some regulatory dances here that tends to delay it. frankly, I think Obama is using this and any significant increase in drilling as a bargaining chip to Republicans who he knows dang well, you know, wants further give in that area. So that's to be determined. I think you will see a pickup in oil drilling, even at the regulatory end, but I think Obama's, you know, using it as one of his trump cards.
Jim, thank you so very much.
Sure. Anytime.
Jim Wiesemeyer is the Senior Vice President for Farm and Trade Policy at Informa Economics in Washington, D.C. You've been listening to Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. This is a production of Illinois Public Media.